When was the last time AIPAC took a position that deviated from Prime Minister Netanyahu?
All the time.
Name one.
Okay. Let me go back and give a little history. If you want to do a deep dive on AIPAC,
I don't. I want to do a shallow dive that gets...
No, I'm not going to do a simple...
There it is, the exact moment a US senator realized that he can't answer the simplest possible question. Ted Cruz claims, with complete confidence, that AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, one of Washington's most influential lobbying organizations, deviates all the time from the Israeli Prime Minister. But when Tucker Carlson asks him to name a single example, suddenly, Ted needs to give the entire origin story.
Let me go back and give a little history. If you want to do a deep dive on AIPAC...
If you strip out the dodge, you can see what's really happening. Ted's got nothing, and he knows that everyone else knows that he's got nothing.
Don't. I want to do a shallow dive that gets...
No, I'm not going to do a simple...
What follows is something genuinely rare in modern political media. A senator getting systematically destroyed by a member of his own political coalition who refuses to accept deflection as an answer. But... I'm getting ahead of myself.
Folks online who are in the fever swamp of AIPAC.
I'm not terrified of AIPAC at all. You're the one who seems a little uncomfortable when I'm asking.
No, this. Not uncomfortable at all.
Why hello, my fellow apes. I hope you are well. You're about to witness Ted Cruz, Texas senator and professional Twister player, attempt to defend the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee against basic questions about foreign lobbying. And before we dive in, let's be crystal clear about something. Asking whether AIPAC lobbies on behalf of the Israeli government is not anti-Semitism. It's the same reasonable question we ask about every other lobbying organization that coordinates with foreign officials, from the Turkey lobby to the Saudi Arabia lobby to trade organizations representing Mexican and Canadian interests. So what's the difference? Well, when you question those groups, no one accuses you of bigotry. You're just doing basic oversight. But question AIPAC, and suddenly you're feverish, obsessed, and trafficking in conspiracy theories. It's a deflection tactic designed to shut down legitimate scrutiny by weaponizing sensitivity around anti-Semitism. And Ted deploys it repeatedly throughout this exchange.
It's weird, the obsession with Israel.
Now, let's also be clear about who we're watching here. Tucker Carlson is a far-right conspiracy theorist, a MAGA propagandist, and someone who spent years platforming white nationalist talking points.
This is the replacement theory, but
it was not a theory, it's a reality.
Ted Cruz is, well, Ted Cruz. He's the same man that called the Obama administration the world's leading financer of radical Islamic terrorism. He's also a senator who, in 2020, led an effort by a group of Republicans to refuse to count Pennsylvania's Electoral College votes. Neither of these people are good guys. But here's what makes this exchange so fascinating. Despite being a far-right philosopher in the same way that McDonald's is fine dining, Tucker actually performs real journalism here. He asks simple, factual questions and refuses non-answers. And that's worth studying, regardless of what you think of his politics, because it exposes how rarely this kind of sustained accountability actually happens in political media.
I've never taken money from the Israel lobby, have you?
So strap in, because we're about to watch Twister Ted learn what happens when deflection tactics that work in short cable news segments fail catastrophically under sustained, focused questioning. This is what real accountability looks like when someone actually demands it, and it is absolutely brutal.
We get massive benefits from Israel.
Okay, this is absolutely wild. Data brokers are building files on people like you and me that stretch to 11 pages and beyond. We're talking address histories, phone numbers, family connections. Hell, they're even tracking what we buy and where we shop. So here's what's happening. These data broker companies are pulling in billions, literally billions, trading our personal information without our consent to whoever's buying. Marketers, scammers, spammers, stalkers, the whole bunch. And yeah, they're technically required to delete your data if you request it, but they deliberately make it a bureaucratic nightmare. You'd have to go through hundreds of these sites one by one. That's where today's sponsor, Aura, comes in. They handle all of the heavy lifting for you. Aura is the complete security solution. You're getting dark web monitoring to flag when your data appears, real-time alerts for credit and bank fraud, continuous identity protection, a built-in VPN, antivirus, and password manager, plus actual US-based support who answer their phones. Sure, other identity protection services might have a couple of these features, but nobody else delivers this full arsenal at this price point. And if things go sideways, you're covered for up to $5 million in identity theft insurance. Once you subscribe to Aura, you'll see them methodically purge your information from dozens of these parasitic sites. Spam calls, they will drop off a cliff. Those creepy targeted ads stalking you everywhere. History. That unsettling sense that your digital life is being monitored. Finally, gone. Honestly, it's maddening that these companies are cashing in on our data, but at least now you can fight back. Try Aura free for 14 days at aura.com/rationalityrules. Within those 2 weeks, you'll see exactly where your data is being sold, and Aura will be actively scrubbing it from broker sites without any effort from you. Stop leaving yourself vulnerable online. Thanks.
We get massive benefits from Israel. Israel shares the Mossad as one of the best intelligence sources on the planet. The enemies of Israel, the people who hate Israel, they all hate us. It's almost a perfect overlap. And so if we tried to recreate, if we're just trying to defend America, we tried to recreate the national security benefits of our alliance with Israel, it would cost, I don't know, $30 billion, $300
billion. We start off with Ted not describing the alliance, but selling it. Notice how he front-loads the indispensability. Massive benefits, best intelligence, perfect overlap.
Massive benefits, best intelligence, perfect overlap.
This language is intended to position support for Israel as synonymous with defending America itself. And do you know what? That's useful optics for a senator who materially benefits from the US-Israel relationship. Whether motivated by genuine conviction or political calculation, arguing purely from self-interest wouldn't be persuasive. So, Ted's move is to recast this as patriotic realism instead. In doing so, he transforms his later exaggerations into what sounds like hard-nosed security analysis. And when he says that the enemies of Israel hate us,
the enemies of Israel, they all hate us,
we're already encountering our first major fallacy. The false dichotomy. That's when someone presents two positions as if they are the only possibilities, when more may exist. Think about how this plays out in debates about policing. Someone might say, you must support the police unconditionally, or you want total anarchy in the streets. But hang on, you could support police reform, better training, improved accountability measures, community policing models, or any number of positions between those two extremes. The false dichotomy collapses all of that nuanced middle ground into a simplistic binary choice. What Ted is doing here is exactly the same pattern. He collapses every possible position on the Israeli-US relationship into just two options. If Israel's enemies are America's enemies, then either you support Israel and defend America, or you oppose Israel and side with America's enemies. By reframing the relationship this way, Ted makes it nearly impossible to question specific policies or military aid without appearing anti-American. So, let's test this claim. Does this perfect overlap between Israel's enemies and America's enemies actually exist? Turkey, a NATO ally, maintained strained ties with Israel. Saudi Arabia and the UAE kept close US relationships for decades before even considering normalization with Israel. India stands as a key US partner while historically backing Palestinian positions. China trades with both nations but pursues entirely distinct interests. Even Iran has maintained US-backed channels while remaining hostile to Israel. So, no, the overlap isn't perfect. What Ted presents as a geological fact is actually geopolitical fiction, a convenient story that erases complexity to sell a predetermined conclusion. Building on the shaky foundation, Ted then throws out his cost estimate, and this is where things get interesting. The comment about what it would cost America without the Israel alliance, $30 billion, $300 billion, reveals another rhetorical technique at work, namely hedging, avoiding commitment by using vague, cautious, and non-committal language. You'll recognize this in everyday politics. Think of a senator asked whether they're run for president who replies, "I have no plans at this time." They haven't ruled it out, have they? They've just padded the answer with ambiguity to dodge the commitment while keeping every door open. By admitting, "I don't know," Ted shields himself from scrutiny if challenged on specifics, while those huge, wildly shifting numbers still plant the impression of overwhelming value. He threw out two numbers separated by $270 billion and kept talking.
$30 billion, $300 billion.
$100 billion.
Gentlemen, silence.
That is a spread wide enough to essentially contain Finland's entire GDP, tossed out as a casual estimation. What's the foundation of that calculation? Where's the analysis? Because here's what Ted conveniently leaves out. The alliance also generates significant costs in defense spending, precisely because of Israel's relationship with its neighbors. Talking of which, consider Israel's current military incursions into its neighbors, Lebanon, Syria, Gaza, and the West Bank, and its expansionist policies, which create ongoing regional instability. The United States sends billions in military aid supporting these operations, which not only generates blowback in the form of terrorist attacks, specifically targeting America, but also, and more importantly, erodes its relationships, and thus its influence with much of the world. Each escalation deepens global resentment, isolating the US diplomatically and undermining the credibility it relies on to lead international coalitions. The US isn't just paying for intelligence, it's inheriting enemies. That is a cost that Ted never factors into his back-of-the-napkin calculation. And speaking of things that Ted leaves out, notice how Mossad appears in his presentation, as a pure asset, as a gift that keeps on giving. What he conveniently admits tells you everything about how this argument is constructed. Mossad's records include assassinations and sabotage operations abroad, including in friendly countries, operations conducted without host nation approval, operations that have resulted in collateral damage, civilian casualties, and repeated accusations of violating international law. You see, presenting Mossad as an unqualified benefit requires deliberately ignoring a rather substantial file of diplomatic incidents. Ted wants you to see the intelligence victories, while carefully editing out the sovereignty violations and the bodies those operations leave behind.
It would cost, I don't know, $30 billion, $300
billion. So can you elaborate? And again, I'm going into this as someone who's always liked Israel, and still does. But I also think at this point, given where we are, it's fair to ask rational questions about what the benefits are.
Good.
So does Mossad share all of its intelligence with us?
Oh, probably not, but they share a lot. Really? We don't share all of our intelligence with them, but we share a lot. It's a close alliance.
All right. Notice Tucker's careful positioning before he even asks his question. He presents himself as someone who's always liked Israel and still does, a deliberate protective posture.
As someone who's always liked Israel and still does.
Criticizing Israeli policy is still, for Republicans at least, controversial. And so, knowing his audience, he casts himself as a sympathetic insider rather than an adversary, making his challenge appear fair-minded rather than hostile. The question itself, whether Mossad shares all of its intelligence with the US, is one that Tucker thoroughly knows the answer to. As an experienced journalist, this isn't a quest for information, it's a carefully set trap. He's forcing Ted to acknowledge an uncomfortable asymmetry in the relationship. Even after all that talk about perfect overlaps and massive benefits, there are clearly some notable gaps.
Does Mossad share all of its intelligence with us?
Oh, probably not, but they share a lot. We don't share all of our intelligence with them, but we share a lot.
In Ted's answer, he immediately jumps to deflection via the tu quoque fallacy, when someone rejects criticism by accusing the other person of doing the same. Think about when, for instance, Trump imposed travel restrictions on several Muslim-majority countries. When critics called it discriminatory, his supporters responded, well, Obama did it too, ignoring that Obama's actions was not an executive order, did not involve visas, and was a temporary pause in response to a specific security threat from one country, not a sweeping ban on multiple nations. The you do it too deflection sidesteps whether the policy itself is justified. In this conversation, Ted concedes probably not on Mossad sharing everything.
Oh, probably not, but they share a lot.
A hedge that protects him from being called wrong while still sounding cooperative. But he immediately pivots to we don't share all of our intelligence either.
We don't share all of our intelligence with them, but we share a lot.
This sidesteps Tucker's actual question entirely. Instead of defending whether Mossad delivers the massive intelligence that Ted just claimed, he normalizes the fact that Mossad withholds information, making it sound like business as usual in intelligence partnership.
It's a close alliance.
Do they spy domestically in the United States?
Oh, they probably do, and we do as well. And friends and allies spy on each other, and I assume all of our allies spy on us.
Here, after Ted's vague but confident dodge on the first question, Tucker sharpens his probe, representing a deliberate calculated escalation, moving from do they share to do they spy?
Do they spy domestically in the United States?
It's no longer about information exchange between partners, it's about foreign espionage on US soil. Tucker is forcing Ted to confront a taboo truth rather than coast on abstractions about alliance. And the response is fascinating. The casual, offhand tone, yeah, probably.
Oh, they probably do, and we do as well.
Makes it sound like Tucker asks to borrow his lawnmower rather than asks a serious question about foreign espionage on American soil. And make no mistake, Ted's tone is part of the deflection itself. What we're seeing here is the tu quoque, again, the same technique that we saw him use before. He admits that they probably do, then instantly pivots, saying, and we do as well. Once again, redirecting scrutiny away from Israel by invoking mutual guilt, transforming a moral question into a shared shrug of complicity. Pressing on, building on that deflection, he frames espionage as not a controversial choice, but as a standard practice.
I assume all of our allies spy on us.
In other words, he employs an appeal to normacy, where someone justifies behavior simply because it is considered normal or common. Think about when one defends corporate lobbying or PAC donations by saying all politicians take money from special interests. The fact that a practice is widespread doesn't make it ethical, it just means that the problem is systemic. The appeal to normacy tries to use prevalence as a substitute for justification. So, back to when Ted acknowledges Israeli surveillance of America and then follows with friends and allies spy on each other, and I assume all of our allies spy on us.
I assume all of our allies spy on us.
He transforms foreign surveillance from a controversial act into standard diplomatic procedure. If everyone does it, how can it be wrong? You know what? I think it's time we ground this in actual history, because Ted glosses over something significant. Israeli espionage against the US is extensively documented and has been for decades. The Government Accountability Office reported in 1996 that Israel conducts the most aggressive espionage operations against the United States of any ally. A pattern that, while dated, underscores how long-standing and serious the concern has been. The evidence includes the Jonathan Pollard case, where Pollard received a life sentence for passing classified information to Israel. The 2004 Lawrence Franklin scandal involved leaked classified Iran documents, and the 2019 Political Report identified Israel as planting surveillance devices near the White House. This isn't speculation, it is an established record.
Well, I assume all of our allies spy on us.
That's okay with you?
You know what? One of the things about being a conservative is that you're not naive and utopian. You don't think humans are all... Part of the reason socialism doesn't work is the mantra from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs doesn't work. As a conservative, I assume people act in their rational self-interest. It's why the free market works.
After hearing Texas Ted repeat the same deflection twice with, yeah, but everyone does it, Tucker shifts his strategy to close off the escape route. He asks if it's okay.
And that's okay with you?
It's more pointed, more direct. And so Ted has to either explicitly condone Israeli espionage or contradict himself. Or, well, an honest person would have to answer. But what happens instead? We catch a spectacular red herring when someone introduces an unrelated point to distract from the original issue. To witness an example, we need look no further than Pumpkin Palpatine once again. In October 2016, Trump was asked about the Access Hollywood tape in which he was recorded talking about grabbing women by the pussy. How did he respond?
You brag that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning people in steel cages. I hate it, but it's locker room talk, and it's one of those things.
It was mere deflection, introducing a different outrage to avoid accountability for the original. In this conversation, Ted, rather than addressing whether he finds Israeli spying acceptable, launches into a conservative monologue about socialism, utopianism, human nature, free markets, but none of it directly answers the question at hand.
Socialism doesn't work is the mantra from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs.
Is spying on America acceptable? By the time he's done rambling through ideology, you've almost forgotten what Tucker asked in the first place. And in the midst of all that rambling, by calling objections to espionage naive and utopian,
being a conservative is that you're not naive and utopian?
Ted is implicitly insulting Tucker. Whether intentional or not, this paints Tucker's question as childish, as the kind of thing that only an idealist or a fool would ask. It is a risky move from a fellow Republican, and an ad hominem at its heart, when someone attacks the person instead of addressing the argument. Think about when Greta Thunberg began her activism about climate change. Instead of addressing addressing the science, critics attacked her personally, calling her a manipulated child, claiming her parents were exploiting her, questioning her mental health.
Like a miserable child, a child that's been manipulated by adults.
The attacks had nothing to do with climate data or her arguments, right? In this case, with Ted, rather than addressing a straightforward national security question, he transforms it into a culture war loyalty test, where rejecting foreign spying becomes evidence of softness or ideological impurity, which insults anyone outside of his particular ideological camp as hopelessly naive and irrational.
As a conservative, I assume people act in their rational self-interest. It's
so it's
why
conservative to pay people to spy on you?
It's conservative to recognize that human beings act in their own self-interest, and every one of our friends spies on us, and I'm not...
Rather than let Ted hide behind conservative philosophy, Tucker cuts through the abstraction with a reductio ad absurdum, when someone takes an idea and pushes it to an extreme or absurd conclusion to discredit it. In the case at hand, Tucker applies a reductio sharply when he asks, so is it conservative to pay people to spy on you? The question traps Ted within his own vocabulary. If self-interest justifies Israeli spying, then by Ted's logic, America ends up paying for another country's self-interest, the exact opposite of conservatism. The contradiction surfaces in the very terms Ted hides behind. But the senator is very good at dodging, retreating behind his repeated platitudes about self-interest. This part of the exchange, in fact, crystallizes what will define their entire encounter. Put simply, Ted has established his escape route. Whenever a concrete question threatens, about spying, about reciprocity, about cost, he'll launch into the clouds of abstraction of markets, ideology, and human nature. Yet, Tucker's question is a tether, dragging him back to ground level where his generalities can't support their own weight.
And every one of our friends spies on us, and I'm not...
Do you like it? That's my question. I'm not asking whether they have motive to do it. Of course they do. I understand that, and by the way, I'm not mad at them. But you're an American lawmaker, so I just want to know your attitude. Yeah. You said that your guiding principle, in fact, the only principle, the only criterion.
I said guiding, the overwhelming. I wouldn't say only.
Is it in America's interest? Is it in America's interest for Israel to spy on us, including on the president?
It is in America's interest to be closely allied with Israel because. We get huge benefits for it. And you want to see the clearest?
By this point, Tucker has watched Ted dodge and deflect repeatedly. So he does what any good interviewer does when faced with evasion. He restates the question, stripping away any ambiguity. Do you like it? That is my question. It's direct, simple, impossible to misunderstand.
Do you like it? That's my question.
And Tucker doesn't stop there. He anticipates Ted's next deflection and builds a fence around the question, making it harder for him to slip away. But of course, Ted seizes on the one small part of what Tucker said with, I said guiding, I wouldn't say only, in order to stall once again.
I said guiding, the overwhelming, I wouldn't say only.
It's pedantic hair splitting dressed as intellectual wriggle. But Tucker is having none of it, demanding an answer. And the result? We get another red herring, the same distraction technique Ted used to avoid the is it okay question. Is it in America's interest to be spied on by its allies, no less, becomes we get huge benefits from the alliance.
We get huge benefits for it.
You see, Ted answered a completely different question, with the breach of trust getting repackaged as proof of partnership strength. Now, if you're already tired of hearing a politician never answer the damn question, buckle up. There is more to come.
Ah, shit. Here we go again.
We get huge benefits for it. And you want to see the clearest?
But I just want to stop on the spying for a second. That it takes place, as you know, and including on the President of the United States and several presidents. And I just want to know if that's okay and why is it okay? Wouldn't an American lawmaker say to a client state, you're not allowed to spy on us. I'm sorry. I know why you want to. I'm not mad at you, but you're not allowed to.
Sure.
And I don't care for it. I don't want to be spied on by you. Is that, it's kind of weird not to say that, but you don't seem able to say that.
Sure, I would say don't spy on us. They're going to anyway. And by the way, the Brits are, the Canadians are, like.
The kitchen is getting hot, huh? Tucker tries once more to pin Ted down, even modeling what a reasonable answer would sound like. You're not allowed to spy on us. I'm not mad at you, but you can't do it.
I'm not mad at you, but you're not allowed to.
Sure.
And I don't care for it.
By defining the moral baseline in advance, Tucker makes any deviation instantly obvious. It's like showing someone the answer key before the test. Their failure to match it becomes damning, and Tucker's tone stays calm throughout, which makes Ted's eventual dodge even more glaring. There's also a subtle dig here. Tucker reminds Ted that he is an American lawmaker, not as a credential, but as an obligation.
Wouldn't an American lawmaker say to a client state, you're not allowed to spy on us?
The message is, you, of all people, should be defending national sovereignty. For Tucker's audience, perpetually suspicious of foreign influence, this move is especially devastating. He doesn't call Ted compromised, not quite, just observes that he doesn't seem able or willing to defend American interests, letting viewers draw their own conclusions. Ted's response compounds yet more fallacies. He begins with apparent resolve.
Sure, I would say don't spy on us.
But what happens next?
They're going to anyway.
This is an appeal to inevitability, when someone dismisses opposition to something by claiming it's unavoidable or bound to happen regardless of what we do.
That is the sound of inevitability.
Let's look back at climate change debates again. This time with the line of thinking, China and India will keep polluting anyway, so why should we act? It's a way of transforming choice into a foregone conclusion, turning agency into helplessness. This is what Ted does here, transforming moral violation into natural law. By presenting espionage as inevitable, they're gonna do it anyway, he shifts the focus from should this be allowed to can it be stopped? In an instance, we're not discussing principles, but accepting realities, not demanding respect, but acknowledging powerlessness.
The Brits are, the Canadians are.
Then comes the cascade of whataboutism, when someone deflects criticism by pointing to others supposedly doing the same thing, instead of addressing the original point. You know the trick. It might just be the tangerine tyrant's favorite tactic whenever he's criticized. For instance, when Trump was pressed on his respect for Vladimir Putin, a man known for ordering killings, he shrugged, there's a lot of killers. You think our country's so innocent, do you?
I do respect him.
Do you? But why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with them.
Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Well, you think our country's so innocent?
It's pure whataboutism. Deflect.